I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that magicians are assholes.
Do all magicians know all the secrets and we're just not in on the joke? Or is it hard for even someone like you to know what someone's doing?
All magicians love to be fooled because all magicians think they know everything.
The reason why I think that psychics don't exist, and maybe even mentalists, is because why wouldn't they be able to predict the lottery numbers?
Exactly. And they'll always give you some artificial response as to why not. Oh, I can't do it for me.
Have you ever been doing a magic trick and it's gone horribly wrong?
I almost set a theater on fire once, which is why I don't use fire anymore. The police, they arrested me once on stage. I've got tricks so wrong that there has been no way out other than to say, guys, I screwed that up. You know what's hilarious? People think it's part of the show.
If you could perform one trick for anyone in history, who would it be?
I would want to do a magic trick for either Einstein or Tesla. I love doing magic for people who are really fucking smart because they think in a different way and they're really easy to fool.
And is there one trick that's the go-to, that's the best one that you always...
Yeah, and I did it for you when we met. I don't, you probably won't remember because it was a long time ago.
Welcome back to Misunderstood, everybody. I'm your host, Rachel, you could tell. Well, I'm really excited for today's guest because he's somebody I knew way back when I lived in Vegas and I ran Town Nightclub. And it's been incredible to see the career he's built ever since then. Steve Valentine has worn many hats in the entertainment world, actor, magician, and now podcast host. When I heard he had launched a podcast about magic, I knew I had to have him on and talk about his fascinating journey and what people get wrong about the art of illusion. Steve has made significant strides in acting. Many of you will recognize him as the eccentric criminologist Nigel Townsend from NBC's Crossing Jordan, a role that spanned 6 successful seasons. His versatility doesn't end there. Steve has appeared in films like Mars Attack and Spider-Man 3 and lent his voice to popular video games, portraying characters such as Alistair in the Dragon Age series and Harry Flynn in Uncharted 2 Among Thieves. Recently, Steve has ventured into the podcasting realm, as I said, with his show Magicians Only. And by the way, you do not have to be into magic to listen to this. He delves into the intriguing world of magic, but he also shares personal stories, conducting candid interviews, and offering a behind-the-scenes look at the craft. So in today's episode, we'll explore the often misunderstood art of magic, discussing its nuances and the misconceptions that surround it. We'll also delve into Steve's experiences juggling dual careers as an actor and magician, and how these creative pursuits intertwine and influence each other. I'm really excited for you to get to know Steve Valentine. Valentine, it's so good to have you in my studio. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. It's so lovely to see you. It's been a minute.
I was going to ask you, you know, my memory from the days in Vegas is so bad. What is your recollection of how we met or how we knew each other? Do you remember?
Do you know, this is so funny because I was listening to an episode of The Girls Next Door. They do their own podcast, right? Where they go over each episode, and there's a Hefner 50th birthday party episode. And I'm in the episode, and they were arguing about how they knew me, and neither could remember how they knew me. And they're both like, but wait, I thought he was your friend. And the other one's like, no, I thought he was your friend. And so it's like, it's hilarious. Vegas, those were good days. No, I had become newly single. I was up in Vegas a lot, as you would when you're newly single. Our mutual friend, I think it was Dino that introduced us. Right. And then he told me about Tao, and you were working at Tao, and that's how we got to know each other. That's my recollection. And right. Then, you know, no, you came to LA, and then there was Magic Castle time and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Right. So it's funny for me, I thought you lived there because I remember seeing you a lot of weekends pretty consistently and feeling like you were there quite a lot. So
I was there a lot, like I lived there, but I didn't. I had to go back to LA to work. Yeah. Right. I was working
Was he the poker player, Antonio, or he was a musician?
He's the magician. That's right. It was because Dino had introduced me to him as well, because he's a magician and a poker player. Right. And Antonio something or other. Yeah.
So he never made it big. We've never heard from him again.
He's been around. No, he plays the circuit. He's won a few over the years. Yeah.
Right. As a poker player.
As a poker player, yeah.
But I don't know
if I was a professional poker player, I would advertise that I have those skills, you know, right. Of a magician.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have so many questions because I was thinking about it. I'm like, you know, it's so funny. Yeah. I have Steve Valentine's number on my phone. I obviously have a history with him in terms of just being in the same place and we knew each other and I was trying to get you in the club and you were one of the crew for quite a while. But I was like, you know, I don't really know him. And then I see this email come through and you had just started a podcast and it was so, you know, what you had written on there was so cool and I wanted to know more. And I think so many people have questions about magic and magicians in general. And there are so many stigmas that go along with that, but you have both sides of the coin. You have that as a skill and you also are an incredibly good actor and you have an amazing voice. And so I just have so many questions for you. And I thought it'd be great to have you come on and talk about what's been misunderstood in your life. So much.
I mean, I think anytime you want to be in any kind of the arts at all, you're going to be misunderstood, right? If you don't want to have a 9-to-5 job, you're going to be misunderstood. If you want to be an actor, definitely people are always like, you know, you should get a real job. And you know, when it doesn't work out, you'll have something to fall back on. And as a magician as well, I think when I started in magic, it wasn't cool. When you go on stage to entertain a crowd, you had to fight to prove that you were worth watching because that was how the British were. They heckle a lot, you know, they're kind of rough crowds. So, if somebody asked you what you did for a living, sometimes you wouldn't even say you're a magician. Now it's like, I can go through customs. I can go through passport control, which happened to me just the other day. And they'll say, what's in your bag? And I'll be like, it's a bunch of magic tricks, which always gets pulled out, by the way, because it looks weird when it goes through the x-ray machine. You know, there's all these weird, like, fake things, you know. And they'll be like, really? And you just see these, like, tough security guys become kids. And like, can you show me something? And you just, it's really an amazing thing now. I think it's having a resurgence. It's cool. I think that goes back to David Blaine taking magic to the streets. I think it happened, you know, Fool Us, which is a show that I think has shown magicians as being human beings. Like we all have passions and there's like levels and tiers and within the craft and all that kind of stuff. But for me, when I went to Hollywood and I did a one-man show about it, like it was really difficult navigating acting and magic because you can be pigeonholed and misunderstood as to what it is you want to be and who it is you are. Right. So I actually quit magic for a number of years and I will eventually talk about the details of why that happened on the podcast. But it was a time when I felt like every audition I went to, I'd bump into somebody who had seen me do a show. Mm. They were literally saying things like, you know, why are you here? We're looking for real actors. You know, it was that kind of shit. And eventually
it almost took your credibility away.
Absolutely. Well, it's like saying, I'm an actor juggler
or a clown
or even model actress, right? If you say you're a model actress, people will assume a certain level of technique, which might not be necessarily true, but you are pigeonholed and Hollywood likes to do that. I think maybe now it's a little different. I think now you're expected to have a million skills beyond YouTube, make your own videos, have a podcast, do all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But certainly in the 90s, when I was attempting to break in, that was one of the biggest things. A lot of my connections I made from performing at the Magic Castle. So it was kind of a very difficult balancing act. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious about your upbringing. As a child, what did you think you wanted to be?
Well, as a kid, I always wanted to be an actor. That was my mom says I used to sit on the couch watching the Oscars when I was like 7 and be like, one day I'm going to be there. And then I would watch all the musicals, even though I'm straight, you know, it's like I knew all the musicals, Singing in the Rain, Fred Astaire, all of that stuff. And then magic came in. I was part of a theater company. I was part of a dancing school. But then I realized I could get extra time on stage if I had a magic act. So it was a hobby at that point. So I put together an act and won a competition when I was 10 and And that just became this extra way to make money and get stage time. So, but it, as a kid, I was very kind. I was definitely a loner, you know, very much kind of off doing my own thing. Nobody really understood me. Nobody really kind of got where my brain was. If I focused, I guess a little bit ADHD, if I focus on something, I dive into it, but I also I don't listen to people who say I can't do something. Mm-hmm. If anything, that makes me want to do it more just to prove them wrong, you know? And I remember there were certain family members and friends back in England who, when I said I wanted to become an actor, see, the British attitude is if you want to make something of yourself, it's like, who do you think you are? Mm. You know, it's like, who do you think you are? Like, you want to be an actor? Who do you think you are? Tom Cruise. You want to be a magician? Who do you think you are? David Copperfield. And that became, that's kind of a don't get above your station class system that we suffer from a lot in England. It's getting better, but it's still there. Right. And whereas I think it's in like America,
it's like a real snarky tone.
It's snarky, but it's also kind of this class system, right? So it's okay. It's like, where do you come from? What makes you think you can be anything? Be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And whereas I think in America, the attitude is you want to be an actor. Great. I believe in you. Go for it. And when you make it, remember me. You know, that's right. Like the difference between the two. So, not to say there weren't people who were like supporting me, but on the whole, but the interesting thing is that when I actually started to work a lot as an actor and I got my first television series, those that didn't believe in me at the time still weren't supportive. Mm. And so I had this amazing realization where I was like, I realized I've been doing it to show these people that right. I could. And then I was like, well, I think I'm just going to do it for me from now on. Mm. Mm. Prove to myself. And then that was so much healthier. You know?
Do you think that throughout your life you continued to be a little bit of a loner? Because being an actor, being somebody in magic, you find yourself, I would think, alone a lot. It's not like a team sport by any means.
Magic is not a team. Well, I mean, we do have conventions of magicians, but on the whole, yeah, magic is a solo enterprise. Acting is, it's an interesting thing. So yes, to answer that question, I think I've always just gone off and done my own thing. Mm-hmm. My hometown is Southend in England. I went back there once and went to the local pub after I was doing my first TV series. And I saw guys in the pub who I was at school with, you know, and they were like, we haven't seen you in years. What are you up to? You know? And I said, well, I moved to Hollywood. I'm doing a television series and movies. And they were like, yeah, get out of here. And they literally were like, let me see your driver's license. Let me see. They couldn't believe it. You know, it just was so alien to them because they'd never left their hometown.
Right.
It was, yeah. So yes, always a loner. When I decided I wanted to do cruise ships, I found a way to do that. When I decided to go to America, I found a way to do that. When, you know, I didn't know anyone in LA. I think we arrived, I had maybe £3,000 in my pocket from selling everything I owned. You know, I didn't think about, well, what will happen if I can't get a job or I can't get papers or, you know, we just gave it a shot.
Right.
And
so, go ahead. You
know, no, it's just the naivety of, It's that thing about when you're used to people not believing in you, you just end up closing off and doing your own thing. And that can be a good and a bad thing. And then later on, it's kind of harder to open up, I think.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Right, I understand that. So where did your love for magic come from, though? I mean, I know from listening to your podcast, and it's a great podcast. People should definitely tune in. You have such a good voice for this stuff. I mean, I don't know if you even need to talk about your own stories to make it fascinating, because your cadence and your voice is so good about, you know, selling a glass of soda or something. I mean, it's fascinating. But I found myself really, really interested in your stories, and you tell some great ones. So I want to start with your story of how magic was introduced into your life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember seeing a kid. I was super young, and I remember seeing this kid do a magic trick on the playground, and then I followed him around and bugged him until he showed me how it was done. And then when I did it, I noticed I could hold the girl's hand while I was doing the trick. You know, I could break the ice. I could get talk to people that I didn't necessarily talk to. I could relate to adults in a way that I'd never done before. It broke the ice. It made friends, and it gave me something really cool to be part of. And then did you listen to the episode where I talk about being in the hospital? So I went into the hospital for this minor surgery. Details are on the podcast, but when I got out of the surgery, they'd done something else to me, which was a surprise. And then my parents were so guilty that felt so guilty. They bought me the biggest magic set they could think of. And I was literally in this children's ward with all these magic tricks, in pain, but surrounded by other kids doing magic for them. And I think it's maybe the traumatic experience plus this kind of like new audience and attention was psychologically very damaging. And probably is why I do what I do today. You know, thing is that the magic has been around. Like I was just telling a friend of mine the other day, I have this memory, which is so weird, where I was in a hospital because I'd passed out in junior high school in the woodwork class. Right. I've never talked about this. So I pass out. I'm obsessed with magic. I pass out. I wake up. I'm on my way to the hospital. I dislocated my jaw. It was a cut wide open. I mean, it was really bad. I'd hit the vise on the way down. I'm in this ward. I'm in this room, and there's like four beds and no one else. And then I fall asleep. When I wake up, there's an old man standing there, and he's in a gown, like in a gown. And he looks, now I look at him, I look back at the memory, and I'm like, he looks a lot like me, like tall. He had a goatee. And he was asking me why I was there. And I told him, and then we started talking magic tricks. And he told me he was a professional magician. And we started talking about this one magic trick and how the best way to do it. Do you hold the cards like this? Do you hold the cards like this? And I had been, even though my jaw was like stiff, I remember saying, no, this is the best way. And I remember him getting very frustrated with me, angry. And then I don't know what happened. He kind of disappeared. And then when I brought it up to the nurses, they were like, there's no one here like that. There's no one in this ward. This is a children's ward. We wouldn't allow an old man to walk around. It was so surreal.
Wow.
And it was almost like it was this other alternative person, a version of, now I look back and I'm like, was that me?
Right.
It feels like it was me getting frustrated with myself. So I have had magic as part of my life since I can remember. And I can tell you that every time I try to stop or get rid of it, it finds a way of coming back into my life.
Wow. What a crazy
It's crazy. I quit magic to work just on the acting, and maybe 10 years without doing any magic at all. And then I was doing a film in New Zealand for Disney. I started working a lot, and I'm shooting in New Zealand, and I literally bump into a guy from my childhood who moved his family there, who had been part of this magic club I was a part of when I was a kid, who had been instrumental in teaching me magic. Hmm. And he was now living in New Zealand, and he had video of back in those days. And that whole thing got me back into it. It was like the universe keeps going, hey, there's this side of you that you need to fulfill. Right. There's this creative, you know, and it's been great. I mean, I just have I've launched back into this as a sideline, and it's become like a major energy in my life. It's wonderful.
So I also heard you tell some very interesting stories that you've started to get into in your podcast. And again, I don't want to give away too much because I do want people to listen to the podcast, but I want you to like wet their whistle a little bit. You had a great story of moving as like 19 years old to the former Yugoslavia, right? And working there and having to do, you had to stand up and do your stuff, but you also had to run a nightclub and be a DJ, all sorts of things you didn't know how to do. And
yeah,
this has been the different random jobs you've had before you kind of ended up being just an actor and musician.
I think what it is like when you're working and you want to break in, and you want to break in as an entertainer. Remember, in England, you can be a variety artist and an actor. You can be both. It's not considered to be a separate thing. Okay. No, I got this opportunity to, was it, 19 to go to the former Yugoslavia, run a nightclub, DJ, do two shows a night, and just live. I actually wrote a treatment about it because the stories are legion, but it was a little fishing village with two competing hotels, and I was the only foreigner living there. Nobody trusted me because I was the foreigner, right? So I took a long time to get everybody's trust, but it was a genuine fishing village, and it had amazing tourism. People came from Germany, Italy, Spain, I mean, England. It was all, and I just had to do the English entertainment. So I was falling in love every week. You know, God, I'm 19. I'm just like, it's insane. And because you're the entertainer, it's much easier to meet girls. So I often think when you're an entertainer, you can look like Quasimodo and you'll have a pretty hot girlfriend. Like you know what I mean? It's like, because you have this confidence that radiates when you're on stage.
That's right.
And then I would DJ in the classic form of DJing, not kind of in the like the version we have today, but even that till 3 a.m. And then just getting into fights with the local police, being 19 and cocky and like thinking I had the Minister of Tourism. He had my back because tourism was huge at that point for that country. So they didn't want anything to happen to anyone. They didn't want any bad press. So, you know, if I was kind of being harassed by any local bullies or whatever, you know, that the police would come and have a word with them. Or if the police, they arrested me once on stage because they told me, the local money is called the dinar, and it had a photo and it has a picture of Marshal Tito, who at the time had been the president of the country. Mm-hmm. And they loved Tito because he stood up to the Russians. He said, no, we're socialists. We're not going to be communist. And the people loved him. He was a hero. And I did this trick where, you know, I take some of their money and I burn it. But I mean, it ends up inside of an orange.
Okay.
A piece of fruit, and I can prove it's the same bill, but the visual of burning Tito's face was considered an insult. And I've been warned not to do it. You know, they told me not to do it, but me being 19, I was like, but it's the trick and it's okay. You don't understand. Look, it's the same bill. They didn't care. So when I kept doing it, one of the cops came in and took me to the station, which in hindsight, you know, you're in Yugoslavia. You don't want to be in a prison in Yugoslavia. You know, you don't want to. But I was able to kind of use the Minister of Tourism's name to get out. Thank God.
Right.
But I had a lot of those moments, you know, getting invited to an island for an orgy and deciding at the last minute not to go, you know, because I wasn't sure if it was a straight or a gay orgy. I mean, there was like being caught, just trapped outside of a house. I hooked up with a girl and got trapped outside her house till the morning. And I'd run outside to pee. I didn't have any clothes on, and I had to hide behind a bush till she woke up. Like, stupid shit that you do when you're a teenager. And we had, so aside from falling in love with everyone, I was also doing all these shows every night and sometimes doing well, and quite often blowing badly, just but it didn't matter. You know, I was able
It was a great place to blow.
Oh yeah. Cause I just, you know, I would often suck badly, but no one cared. There's no YouTube. Right. So it's not going to end up on film. Although I did tell the story of this one guy who had an early video camera and he came up to me after the show and he was like, so we filmed your show. Yeah, and he hands me the tape and he's like, you might want to keep a copy of it, have a look at that. And I was like, oh no, why don't you keep it? It's a memory of your trip. Right. And he said, no, it's all right. You can have it. It must have been so bad. At the same time, there were people that I met that, you know, there was a kid who was 8 years old. And he was with his parents and he got obsessed with magic while I was there. I took him backstage. I showed him all my magic tricks. His parents were in the British television industry and he came to every show and I taught him a couple of magic tricks. And years later, as in 5 years ago, mm-hmm. I get a message from this guy who said, you don't know me, you don't remember me, but I was that kid in Yugoslavia. And he said, started in the West End with his own illusion show. He's had his own television series. He's traveled the world doing magic. He's like, I have this thing I'm about to, this is right before the pandemic. And he said, I have this thing I'm about to open in Toronto. I understand you're in Toronto. Can we meet up? You know, and we sat down and he told me his memories of that time and how important it was to him and how it inspired him to become a magician. And he has had a whole life and a career. And now all these years later, and we have a lot of similarities too. He did cruises. I did cruises. He created a musical about Harry Houdini and I created a television series about Harry Houdini. So like, you know, we have all these things and now he created a software for running a show live, which I use in my show. So all of this,
Full circle.
So you never know who you're going to affect at any point, right, in your life. Right. I'm thinking I'm just there, like partying like an animal and doing magic shows. And here's some other career that's kind of spawned off from that.
Yeah, that's such pretty a great story. So before we get into like the real details of magic for a second, I just want to talk about your acting because I'm curious, did you feel like you were able to focus, you have so many accolades in acting. So it's kind of like, did you get all that in those 10 years when you stopped doing magic or you found that the stopping of the magic didn't matter at all. You were just focused on acting then.
It mattered. Yeah. It mattered because when I stopped, which was 98, 99, I was doing a lot of guest star spots and not series regulars. And as soon as I stopped, I think it was like 2 months later, I got my first television series.
Wow.
There was something, maybe it was psychological, but I got to the point where like, if people asked me if I was a magician, I would say no.
Oh,
if people said to me like, do you do magic? Or I saw you at the castle. I'd say that wasn't me. I was so paranoid about it. I had a producer come up to me on Crossing Jordan one day and he said, as one of the heads of NBC. And he came up to me and he said, a few years ago, didn't you used to do the holiday party at, who was it? Was it Avi Lerner? He's like, didn't you do Avi Lerner's holiday party or something like that? And I was like, no, that wasn't me. And he goes, I have your business card. It says Steve Valentine. I'm like, that's a different Steve Valentine. And I just refused. They wanted me to do the TV show I was doing at the time, which was Crossing Jordan. They wanted me to, my character to do magic. And I was like, no, I don't do magic, guys. And they were like, yeah, we know. And I was like, nope. And they wrote it in the script and I did it so badly on purpose that they never did it again. I mean, that's the level of.
That is hysterical. It's so interesting because magic is such an icebreaker. Like you were talking about when you're going through at the airport or whatever to a job interview, I'm assuming, you know, really to anything. So you must have really been struggling with the credibility to want to take that out of your repertoire at all.
It was a bit Rosemary's Baby. It was a bit, you know, like both loves. I love both of these things. Yeah. And magic has definitely been in my travels. It's one of the greatest skill sets to have. First of all, I can do magic for people who don't speak the same language. It's a visual art form. It is a great kind of equalizer because I performed for some very powerful and wealthy people over the years and like dangerously wealthy, powerful people. But magic has a, you know, they have a, I don't know, almost a childlike attraction to it.
Oh, yeah. There
are people in the former head of the CIA, the former deputy director, John McLaughlin's a friend of mine, and he's an amateur magician, and he loves doing magic shows and he talks about how, they use deception. They've used magic skills in the CIA for right. ever since the beginning. Like Houdini was supposed to have been, you know, an early international spy. So I feel like it is an art form that's very hard to let go of. Mm-hmm. And if you're on a date, it has always been great to break the ice. I can tell a lot about someone I'm sitting down with for dinner, how they react to a magic trick.
Huh. Right.
Yeah.
So I have a bunch of questions about magic in general. All right. First of all, what is the biggest misconception about professional magicians?
Oh, that's a great question. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that magicians are assholes, because what we do is deceptive. And because what we do, you know, I think this whole idea, we don't want you to feel stupid.
Right.
You know, like Pete Holmes has got this great bit where he talks about how like no one knows how to respond to a magic trick. You know, like, I feel stupid. Yay. You know, it's a very funny bit. But I think what we try to do is not to say, I'm not speaking for everybody, but the guys that the people I know who are really good want you to enjoy that feeling of wonder, right? Okay. To forget about all the crazy reality and just think that, wait a minute, that feeling when you were a kid and you believed in Santa or you believed in fairies or you believed in magic when you were a child, anything was possible. We lose that. Mm-hmm. And I think magic can help get you there. I did a show last year and there was a lady, I did a 90-minute show in Pittsburgh, and this lady after in the theater, and this lady was waiting to see me afterwards. And she said, I just want to let you know, I hate magic. She goes, I don't like magic. I've never seen a magic show I liked. I've had a really shitty year. And my daughter said, you need to come to a magic show. And she said, the only reason I came was because I remembered you from television. I recognized you from TV. And she said, I had the best time. She goes, at the end of that show, I realized that 2 hours had gone by without me thinking about my problems.
Ah, oh, that's so nice.
And you go like, that's the beauty of it. For me, that's why I do it. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what you do for a living, what your class system is, none of that. What country you come from, magic breaks those barriers. And so for me, we used to have a reputation of being, you know, like I'm smarter than you. There was a guy called the punk rock magician. And every time he would do a trick, he'd say, fuck you, I'm smarter than you. And you don't like it because I fooled you. You know, and that kind of attitude.
Right.
To me, that's the number one thing.
Right. Can anybody learn magic?
Absolutely. Like anybody can learn anything. So there are people who have incredible propensity for it that can take it to the next level. But I have, you know, I have an online magic school that was something I started when I got back into magic. I thought, you know, I have all of this material that started coming out of me and then I've been building up. The subconscious never stops working, right? So all of this stuff started coming out of me. And then I saw kind of where when you learn magic, we used to learn from books. Now it's like online videos. So all the books are getting lost and destroyed and all those secrets are getting lost and destroyed. So part of Magic on the Go, which is my online magic school, but my goal was to rescue the secrets, right? It was to kind of say, we mustn't forget this. So film it, teach it, learn it, and put it online and put it on behind the school wall. And that, and I've seen people grow so much. People come in with just like, I just want to learn a few tricks. And a year later, they're like, they've got a stage show. They've got a stand-up actor. There was a kid who I met. He was very on the spectrum. His parents introduced me. He was like 13 or 14 years old. Wouldn't look you in the eyes. Not a big talker. You could definitely tell he was on the spectrum. He had Asperger's. And I was talking to his parents and I said, you know, let me send you a couple of videos because he might not want me trying to teach him a card trick personally, but a video is not confrontational and he might.
Right.
it might, you know. So a year later, they came over for a barbecue, these guys. And he walks in, I kid you not, Rachel, he walks in with a deck of cards and he goes, right, I've got three tricks I want to show you. And he looks me right in the eyes and he does these amazing, quite mathematical card tricks. And his parents are like, it's amazing. He's just come out of his shell. It's a tool that he has been able to use to connect with people. Isn't that beautiful?
How awesome.
Yeah. It was, I was like, that's nice. That's worth it. Yeah.
What if your morning coffee could actually change lives? With Thrivers Coffee, it does. Thrivers Coffee is more than just a premium, organic, fair trade certified roast. Every sip directly supports Deliver Fund, a nonprofit dedicated to ending human trafficking. 100% of the proceeds go towards the fight against human trafficking because no one should be bought or sold. And at Thrivers, they don't just care about people, they care about the planet. Their coffee pods are 100% compostable, organic, and nitrogen flushed for ultimate freshness. A better cup, a better world. Join the movement one sip at a time. Visit thriverscoffee.com to order your today and use the code DRINKTHRIVE for a discount on your orders, exclusively for being a listener on our podcast. Again, that's thriverscoffee.com to order yours today.
Well, wait a minute. I have a question about putting all the secrets behind the school wall, right? Does that mean that all musicians, if they take your courses, go to a school, do all magicians know all the secrets and we're just not in on the joke? Or is it hard for even someone like you to know what someone's doing when they show you a trick?
Well, I love not knowing. Like, all magicians love to be fooled because all magicians think they know everything. Right. But they don't, because there's such this vast history of magic. Then, and when everything used to be published in books and pamphlets and manuscripts for the last 200 years, you just can't read everything, right? So, yeah. So for me, what I do
is it science-based, though, or is it just a trick of the eye that we're not understanding?
It's a combination of things, right? Nothing, it's never simple. So there's a lot of assumption, right? You know, if I show you a playing card, you assume it's a card. You don't know that it's made of cake. You know what I mean? Or whatever, you know, you assume. Right. So magic is always a great deal of assumption, psychological misdirection. We talk about like the old fashioned kind of misdirection where I'm like, what's that over there? And everyone looks, but that's not what you want. You want, it's like, I want to get in your mind and have you think in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. So, okay. You know what I mean? I want you to think, oh, I think I see where he's going with this. I think I see what he's going to do. There's something in his hand. And then by the time you see that my hand is empty and you went down the wrong path, I was able to get away with what I needed to get away with. And so there's that. So mm-hmm. You've got your actual assumption, you got your psychological misdirection, and then you also have the story, you have the connection, you have the personality, which a lot of magicians forget that that's the most important thing is I need you to enjoy what I'm doing. You know, when you sat down with Oz Poland, right? You know, he wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to show you. He was connecting with
engaged.
You.
Yeah.
He was engaged. Yeah. It was eye contact and there was personality. And then you've got humanity behind it. Then you're like, am I attracted to this person? How do I feel about this person? Am I uncomfortable? Is it, you know, there's all of these things that are a part of it. And then there's the technical side of it, right? So we can do magic that's very difficult. That it's a bit like a duck swimming on water. On top of the water, it's smooth. Underneath the water, the feet are going like crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's what magic is. Like, it can look like there's nothing happening, but my fingers are doing all kinds of things. Right. So it's a combination of all those layers that create the mystery. And for any magic trick to be successful, I've got to have at least two layers of mystery. It can't be one single thing where you go, oh, wait a minute, that's that. Therefore, boom, I know how it works.
Right.
It has to have levels because that's what makes it work. So the psychology of it is fantastic. And that's why I was able to apply all of that to my acting. So you do a role when you're acting. I've got the character that you see, the duck on the water, but then underneath the water, I'm like, here's my mark. What's the other actor doing? There's somebody messing around behind camera that's distracting me. There's a light that's about to fall. You know, where's my lens? Right. Don't shade that other actor. All those things that are happening.
So you mentioned in there the power of suggestion, or I'm going to think something's happening. Yeah. And there is a little bit of a give and take, even in magic. But so, sure. Like you said, when I had Oz Perlman on, he specifically was like, listen, I am into reading people's body language and behavior. I'm not a magician, which I thought was interesting. He said he started as a magician, but yeah. he really changed into that because he was better at reading. But it sounds like there is a lot of overlap.
Oh, it's an incredible amount of overlap. I've only ever met one person in my entire life I thought was genuinely psychic, and everyone else. And I know some pretty famous psychics who I don't think are real. Now, do most mentalists use magic techniques? Yeah, it's the same thing as me saying, think of a card or think of a person. If you think of a card, it's a magic trick. If you think of a person, it's mind reading. It has a much more emotional depth.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Right. But it's the same trick. There was a cult leader who was famous for taking a seed and putting it in his hand and having everyone pray over that seed for 30 minutes. And then when he opened his hand, the seed had sprouted a little leaf and they created life. Right. That's no different to me taking a coin and changing it into a polo mint. It's the same technique. But he added,
well, what's the technique?
Well, you know, join the club. Right. Join the club and I'll teach you. But, you know, it's a switch, right? You're switching one item for the other. But depending on how it's placed in front of you will depend on your belief system. So there are times when I do mind reading and mentalism tricks sometimes when I'm doing a show. And I will always say, I'm not a real psychic. I want you guys to know all we're doing. I'm just doing an actor thing where I'm saying like, what if I was genuinely psychic? What would that look like? Let's try it. You know, that's my get out of jail free card. Still people will come up to me after the show and say, come on, there's no way you could have known that. You've got some skills. I've had people give me tarot cards. Three times in my life, I've been given decks of tarot cards by people who were psychic, who said they were psychics, who said, you need to have these.
Right. Wow.
You know, it's just, yeah.
The reason why I think that psychics don't exist, and maybe even mentalists, is because why wouldn't they be able to predict the lottery numbers or something like that?
Exactly. And they'll always give you some kind of artificial response as to why not. Oh, I can't do it for me. I studied all of this when we had, I was working on a TV series about Houdini, because Houdini investigated the psychics. And he was genuinely trying to find someone genuine, right? And he teamed up with Arthur Conan Doyle, who created Sherlock Holmes. And even though they were unlikely partners, because Doyle loved psychics and believed everything he saw, they kind of often at times together went and investigated seances. And not once did they find somebody who was genuine. And even if they caught, but Doyle loved it so much, even if they caught someone cheating, he would say, well, you can't expect him to do it all the time. It must be exhausting. Like, people make excuses for you.
Right.
I can tell you that mentalism is 100% magic trick. There's psychology to it. There's definitely body language and things like that. I'm reading people for sure. But it's all called cold reading. It's a technique that fake psychics will do. You come and have you sit down with a tarot reader or somebody with a crystal ball, you know, and now that person's reading you. They're looking at the state of your nails, the jewelry. Is there an initial on a necklace? Are you doing this with your fingers because your problems in your marriage? The psychology of that. Are your shoes muddy? Does it show that you've been in a field? Like, it's Sherlock Holmes 101.
Right.
Ironically,
so it's just being really perceptive too.
Yeah. And so some of the people I know there's one lady I know who's a very famous psychic. I think she thinks what she's doing is real. I just think she's perceptively reading people. So she's going by her gut, but I think her gut is reading the signs. And then, you know, if you really believe, you will give the psychic what they need to know.
Right, right. Who are you following that you think is really good out there as a working magician right now?
Have you heard of Derren Brown?
No.
Do you know Derren? D-E-R-R-E-N. So Derren Brown is a guy who started off as a magician and then moved into the world of mentalism. But his whole presentation is none of this is real. I just have the ability to read people. There's a psychology to it. There's a hypnosis to it. And I think he's one of the greatest performers we have right now.
Right.
He's a British entertainer. You should check him out.
Yeah. I was going to say, is he a British? Because I feel like maybe I know who you're talking about. Yeah. What do you think of, first of all, are there different types of magicians? So you got the street card game ones and then all the way to, you know, David Blaine and his tricks. I remember when he like put himself underground for 2 days or in the water or something insane. And then all the way to David Copperfield, who I've seen his show. I'm not necessarily a huge Copperfield fan, but I will tell you when he makes that car disappear on stage, you're just like, wait.
It's fantastic. What?
And you're watching from every angle and you're like, there's no way. Like he when is, you see things like that, are you like, oh my God? Or you at know
times,
how he's doing it.
At times, yeah. At times I have that. It reminds me why I like magic. You know, I'll see something, holy shit, that was great. You know, you just kind of... I know a lot about magic and they still got me. Like that is an amazing feeling. So there are different kinds of magic. So you have close up magic, which is used to be called pocket tricks, was never respected back in the old days. Mostly just amateur magicians would pull out a few coins and dice and cards and do pocket tricks. That's changed now. I think close up magic, thanks to Blaine, has its golden era right now. People just love it. You've got street magic that's been around since day one. And that's, to me, the ultimate. I'm not a street magician. I have a lot of friends who are. On Magic on the Go, there is an entire masterclass on street magic because I got a bunch of well-known guys together and interviewed them. And we talked about the techniques of pulling a, you know, talk psychology. So these people can go anywhere, pull a crowd and make money. Mm. Like the idea that if you don't have any money in your pocket, you can go to a town square. And one of the guys said, he said, I just look at people like they're walking around with my money in their pocket.
Wow.
Right. So he pulls a crowd and there's techniques for that. And then you do a show and the audience votes with their feet. If you're good, they'll stick around and watch. If you suck for a second, they're going to walk away. It's the ultimate test. Right. And then there's a way of psychologically getting people to open their wallets and give you money at the end of the show. There are these speeches that you give. You can actually make someone walk off to an ATM and come back.
No way.
Street magic is incredible. It's an incredible art form. Birthday parties. I mean, I used to see a lot of birthday party magicians when I was a kid. Yeah. That is respect to those guys because a lot of people think it's cheesy magic. It is the hottest audience in the world. There's a bunch of screaming five-year-olds.
Right.
You know, that is total respect to those guys. I used to do like in the 90s, I would do the Beverly Hills party circuit. That's what kept me alive while I was trying to break in as an actor. So people like Lawrence Kasdan and just like all these Michael Jackson, I worked for all of these big name clients and would do magic for their parties. And sometimes you'd show up at the house and it would be a caviar party. And it'd just be, and the other times, you know, mounds of caviar everywhere. And then you would show up at the same house a month later and it'd be mounds of cocaine. And you're just like, okay, I'm doing magic, you know, and everyone's pretty high. I did magic at the Playboy Mansion. You know, that's how I met Hef originally when we first started to go to the parties there. That kind of high-end client is a whole nother art form. It's a whole nother business. There's a way you have to behave. There's a way you have to dress. You have to be very careful with their guests so that you don't become pushy or clingy. You know what it's like. You mix with these people and it's like, it's like any other kind of hospitality. You have to know how to treat people and behave. And then there's the big shows like Copperfield, like The Illusionists. When Copperfield started out, I remember he was, everything he does is to perfection. He's been doing it a long time. But when he did a television special, like everything he did was worked out within an inch of his life. And the smartest thing that he ever did, which I never realized, but a brilliant business model, was he realized early on that it was the TV show that would bring people to see you live. And live is where you make your money. And we're kind of there now, right? With you don't make money on television and film that much anymore. You're using that as a promotional tool. So he saw that. He was brilliant. He saw that early in the game. So he put every dime of his budget into that television special, you know, to make to make that impact, to become the world's greatest, and then just toured and made. That's why he owns islands,
right,
you know?
Right. Billions. Yeah. So let me ask a question. Have you ever been doing a magic trick and it's gone horribly wrong? We were talking a little bit about this with O's and yes. his situation, but what is something you've been through and how did you get out of it?
I've done shows where I had a table, this equipment just collapsed on top of me and everybody thought it was part of the show, which was dip because then no one came up to help me. I had all this equipment all over me. But the good news is, and this is why I was mentioning the thing with O's is you don't know what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So if a trick goes wrong, I can usually on my feet figure out a way of getting out of it. You can try and set that stuff up in your mind and think about all the things that can go wrong,
right,
but you'll never get everything. And it's the thing you would never think about. I have tricks that are foolproof, that cannot fail, that have failed horribly. I've had things set. I almost set a theater on fire once, which is why I don't use fire anymore. I've had smoke just billow out of a prop throughout the entire show. I've got tricks so wrong that there has been no way out other than to say, guys, I screwed that up. And you know what's hilarious? People think it's part of the show. they're like, even after the show, they're like, we're waiting. You know, the magic castle, people, we're waiting for you to, we know there's something happening, you know, and you're kind of like, no, I screwed it up. And they're like, no, there's something going on. We know that. And so that taught me this super valuable lesson where in the old days, if something went wrong, I would just be like, ah, shit. But now I kind of like it. It makes me human. I'll lean into it. If it goes wrong, if somebody figures it out, I'll be like, that's so cool. You got it. Okay. I need to check, you know, I'll give them the kudos. Yes. It's just a magic trick, right? It's not like the end of the world. I was doing a show recently where I have a video of it as well, where this guy's sitting at a table on stage with me and I'm off to the side of the stage. I do this narrative show and I'm telling a very serious, emotional moment in my life. And the guy's sitting at the table on the other side of the stage, waiting for me to come over to do a trick from the audience. Right? And he knocks playing cards off the table onto the floor, right in the middle of my monologue, like kills the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I look over at him and he's like, I'll get them. And he bends over to pick up the cards. And as he bends over, his ass comes out the back of his pants, essentially. Like it's the biggest plumber's crack you've ever seen on stage in spotlight for everyone to see. Mm-hmm. The show stops because it's hilarious. Everyone's cracking up. He doesn't realize his butt's on display. Aww. My moment is gone, but it was so funny that we just let that live and breathe right. and lean into it. And then at some point have to go, all right, now you'll remember I was being very serious. Let's get back to that, you know? And I think in life, I don't know if you found this, but when shit goes wrong, sometimes you got to lean into it, embrace it and go, yeah.
Yeah.
Happened or that's me, but so what, you know, that's it.
I love that. That's a very true and important thing for people to remember, because I think so many times when that happens, you get disappointed because the moment you were having isn't going the way you want it to. And you get all out of sorts, but you're right, to embrace it and be in the moment and pick up from where you left off is how you pick yourself up. And it's very
don't you important. Feel that way when in life? I know people who plan everything ahead to the point where even if something great happens that wasn't what they planned, mm-hmm. they can't enjoy that because they didn't succeed with the one thing that they, or quite often I know someone who very much expects people to respond to things in a certain way. Mm. And behave. And if they don't behave it in that particular way, then she's always disappointed.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You know, and quite often there's that whole thing about the universe has a better plan for us than we think we do.
Right. So maybe you shouldn't plan too far.
Or at least be aware of the nudges and the signposts. Yeah. I talk about it a lot, but I really believe there are signposts in life that if we're open to it, I feel those signposts will send us in the right direction, but you got to be aware, you got to be open and willing to view it.
And perceptive, like we were talking about earlier. Yeah. So if you said you have performed for a lot of big name people. Mm. If you could perform one trick for anyone in history, who would it be?
In history?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this. Well, the first thing that I would love to have met Houdini, only because the guy was so insecure and was so concerned about his legacy that to be able to, he would not believe how famous he became after death. But if I was going to perform for someone, I would want to do a magic trick for either Einstein or Tesla. I love doing magic for people who are really fucking smart.
Right. You mean because Elon?
Elon. Yeah. Because they think in a different way, mm-hmm. and they're really easy to fool. Like that. You can do, I used to do shows for the Rand organization in Santa Monica. You
know, think tank.
Massive think tank, right? Smartest people in the world figuring out world issues. And I would do their holiday party every year. And I would deliberately take the dumbest tricks because I used to get a kick out of just seeing these guys go like, wait a minute, nah, and they're thinking on all these different levels. And I'm like, it's so simple, you know. It's an extra card. In my mind, I'm like, this is, but I love that. So I would love to do magic for Einstein. I think that would be brilliant.
I love that. And is there one trick that you always know to be like the one trick that's the go-to, that's the best one that you always would
want? Yeah. And I did it for you when we met. I don't, you probably won't remember because it was a long time ago, but it was, I do this trick that was taught to me. I had a mentor when I was a kid, which was super important, I think, in my life. And he had this trick that he always did. And I love it. And it's, if we were at a bar, I would have you think of a playing card, any card you wanted. I would try to pull it out of the deck of cards and fail. And then you'd be like, oh, poor Steve, this is embarrassing. Right. and then we would cheers our drink and it would be in your drink, folded up in quarters, in your drink on the bar.
Now, how could you possibly do that?
Exactly.
All right. Well, maybe on your final podcast episode, you'll have me on and we can do it in person or something, and you'll teach me how to do it.
I'll do it for you when you least expect it. Maybe one day we'll both be in LA. We'll do a night at the Magic Castle although I got to tell you, I've had like great experiences with that trick because sometimes I've had like busboys clear up the drinks. The glasses, you know, and I'm like, no, come back with that's got a card in it, you know, like, because right. I like to wait. I would wait for you to find the card in your drink. Like sometimes you could be having a drink and you wouldn't even notice it's there.
Right.
And then there's that great kind of what the fuck moment, kind of like, you're just, this is insane. Right. To me, I love that trick because it breaks the fourth wall, but not in a creepy way. Right. So there's that trick that magicians were doing in the 90s where they would, and it's, I hate it, where they have you fold a card and put it in your mouth. And then you take an ace of clubs and you fold it and you put it in your mouth. And then the magician takes a queen of hearts and puts it in their mouth. And then apparently you kiss and then the cards change places. And it's the creepiest, like how to use tricks to pick up chicks.
Right.
Kind of thing.
I love it.
Thank God no one does that trick anymore. Somebody did and got punched out. And I think that was that message.
That was the end of that. Was part of the Me Too movement or something.
I actually did a show with Charlie Sheen called Anger Management. And I did a bunch of episodes and I was playing his kind of nemesis who was going out with his ex-wife, Selma Blair. And they said, we want him to do, would you be okay doing a magic trick? Like this guy is hitting on Selma. No, it wasn't. It was the other girl on the show. I can't remember her name now. The other actress on the show. And they're like, in this bar scene, we think it'd be really cool. Your guy is so slimy that maybe there's a magic trick that he does to hit on the girl. And so I said, yeah. I said, you know, the perfect one is the one where you put the cards in the mouth. And we did. And so we did it on that episode. Just it's just so gross.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right. Well, if people want to hear more from you, they can listen to your podcast, Magicians Only. You can get it anywhere you get your podcast. Is that right?
Yeah, it's everywhere. And it's not just for magicians. It's kind of a misnomer. I feel like it's for everyone who either loves magic, you know, or just is magic. Like, we're all magicians in our own way, the way that we survive. So the podcast isn't really about the secrets of magic and how the tricks are done. It's more about the stories behind it, the people, the kind of the crazy shit that happens to magicians. Like, I once ended up in the middle of the desert not that long ago, in a place surrounded by military vehicles, performing for some of the most powerful people in the world. And in the middle of nowhere, right? And it was right before a military coup that I didn't know was about to happen. But I had been brought in as the entertainment. And you like, holy shit, like, these stories, which I can't even tell that whole story because I signed an NDA, but one day, maybe when I don't care anymore, I'll tell that story. But you find yourself in these crazy situations, right? And as an entertainer. And so I think those stories are sometimes more interesting than the actual magic show that you're doing. So we have a lot of that stuff and on the podcast, a lot of life advice.
It's a great podcast with great stories. It drops every Monday. Another one is coming out this Monday. Can you just tease anyone in the future that we should be excited to hear, or a story that we're
going to do? There's a couple of guys coming up. So there's a friend of mine who's a professional magician, Bill Cook, who works all the time, has amazing stories, including how many people have died during his show, which I think is a really interesting topic. So he's going to be like three episodes from now. There's a guy, Jez Rose. I like this idea of being a multi-faceted human being and skill-wise, you know. And so I like the idea of magicians of speaking. A lot of people are doing speaking. They're speaking at events, corporate events. And I think it's a great skill set to have. And magicians have been wondering for years how they can transform or translate what they do into the speaking world, into the speaking environment. And so a buddy of mine, Jez Rose, he does exactly that. And so I interview him on an upcoming episode on kind of the techniques that you need to do in order to kind of stand on your own, and what it is to entertain and speak to a corporate crowd, which is a whole different audience, right?
Right.
There's so many different rule sets for that. And then the next episode up is actually based on a trick that I love called the egg bag, which has this really checkered history. And there was a guy who was famous for doing it, and none of us know how he did it. So I did an investigation, and I kind of like, so this is a two-part episode where I investigate this particular trick and kind of trying to figure out exactly how it was done.
Amazing. That's where can people find you if they want to sign up for one of your classes?
Well, the Magic on the Go is magiconthego.com. It's all at stevevalentine.com. So you can find everything there, but magiconthego.com takes you to the online magic school subscription service, which is awesome. It's almost like 1,000 videos now,
which is
insane, you know, and it's available at your fingertips on your phone. So you can learn anywhere.
Perfect. Steve, it's been a pleasure. I hope we see each other in person sometime soon. Everybody, keep listening to his podcast, subscribe, like, and we will hopefully hear from you again.
I'll see you soon. Thanks, love. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.